Oh, welcome to My Stories of Chinese Characters podcast series. I'm Uncle Hans.
And this is Adam. So thank you for taking me on a ride with the slow train in Daliang Mountain. You know, it was an experience like none other.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting experience. It's not the big city in China, it's the countryside in China.
I came to Daliang Mountain. Pusheng is a small town. Most of the residents here are the people of the Yi ethnic minority. It is also the starting point of the
It's really part of the daily lifestyle. I mean, for me, I don't consider train as like, I mean, I consider the subway, like I live in Beijing. So the subway is something I do in my daily life, but like taking a train every day back and forth from home, that's something that's very foreign to me. So it was truly an interesting experience.
When we're on a train like that, it's sort of like a family experience. You're going to be on the train usually for a very long time. And so you get to know the people there. You get to walk around and meet new people.
There was also a 75-year-old man who was on the train for free and is about to sell his chickens.
I've met many of my friends on trains crossing Africa or India or Central Asia. It's an interesting experience on a long train ride.
And it's not even the fact that it's a long train ride, I found. Like, I've been on super fast trains, you know. China has the fastest trains in the world. But there's a different mood, right? Don't you agree? It's like there's something different about the fact that it is a slow kind of... You feel the rhythm of like the tracks and the world slowly goes by. You are kind of, there's this like spirit that encourages you to start conversation and interact with the people around you. But I mean, like I spent, 5 hours on a fast train and that didn't exist. Everyone's on their iPads and maybe that has to do. Go ahead.
On the fast train, we're just interested in getting there. And the problem is that there are no ducks or chickens on a fast train. So the only thing we have is our cell phones.
Yeah, I was going. I remember on the slow train that you took me on, Uncle Hansa, I was trying to get to the sink after getting out of the bathroom, and there was a goat, or actually there was two goats, tied up to the sink, like on leashes. And I was like, well, I guess I'll wash my hands later. Which didn't matter because I had to pet the, I was inclined to pet the goats. And so I would have to wash my hands after that anyway.
We saw lots of chickens, ducks, sheep, and people getting into the car. The livestock compartment was very clean. And we interacted with a lamb. Adam and I were both excited because we had never seen a train like this.
But, okay, so...
I never washed my hands after petting a goat.
I remember. And you're still alive today, I have to say. Even I remember you eating food afterwards. You seem to be doing okay. Your immune system is quite strong, and I commend you on that.
It's because I've eaten everywhere. Eaten off the streets in India and Africa, and so I don't worry too much about eating in places like that, as long as I see that the dishes are kind of clean. But anyway, I haven't
going back to the train. Let's your hygiene rituals. Let's just leave that. Now, this difference between slow and fast, I do think it's important, and I'm curious because it was like what. The word for speed, I was trying to remember that because this is very important because I think that's a very important element to the experience.
It's two characters, su du. Each character is one syllable in Chinese, and the word for speed is su du. It's two characters. One is a pictophonetic. It has a phonetic and a piece that indicates that you're moving, and the other, du, means the level. It means the speed level. So du is also the word for degrees. And it actually comes from a musical instrument, the degree of sound or the degree of pitch. If you see the ancient character, you can see that it's actually a petrophone or like a xylophone.
So there's this relationship between like frequency or pitch, like you said, and how basically like, I guess, an association between like wavelengths and the speed, right? So, I mean, like faster, if I want to get crazy with it, like isn't the smaller the wavelength, the faster it, the more energy something has, right? Or at least with light.
In ancient times, they didn't know about wavelength. They just knew that they had high pitch and low pitch, and it was that's how they measured something. It's like the degree. I don't think of it so complicated. It's just a character that indicates the degree, how big. So sudu means how big is the speed.
Okay. All right. That's wild.
We have another character, Xing. And in Chinese, we have what's called the five elements. We have Wu Xing. The character I'm talking about is pronounced Xing. It's actually originally a pictograph of a street intersection. But it's also pronounced Hang. One pronunciation is the southern pronunciation. The other is the northern pronunciation. And we have two words, Wai Hang and Nei Hang. In ancient times, you had different streets that sold different things. And if you lived on the street that sold, for instance, wood products, you were a Nei Hang. You were on that street. If you didn't live on that street, then you were Wai Hang, or off the street. It means the difference between a professional and someone who's not a professional. So you see, you can find a lot in Chinese characters if you know their origin.
Right, right. But again, how does that associate to speed or traveling? What is the...
Well, it's a street intersection. And so it also has the meaning of to walk or to go on the street.
Okay. Which way are you going to go? Are you going the professional route or the amateur route?
I'm Uncle Hans. I'm always a professional.
All right. That's interesting. Speaking of traveling down different roads, do you have any type of like interesting travel stories or places that you that you've been that you could use the Wei Hong and the
Wai Hong and Nei Hong?
Yeah, give me some Wai Hong and Nei Hong stories.
Well, the character is actually a pictograph of an intersection. And so there are many things that are related to intersections or many things that are related to roads. And
I'm specifically saying like, so like, is there an intersection point in your life that you would like to describe about like, you know, where you had to make a, where you had to try, like you were going to, had to make a choice at an intersection, whether to go straight, right, or left.
I'll tell you that in 2000, I was 50 years old. And so I bought a one-way ticket to Moscow and a one-way ticket from Shanghai back home. And I had no idea how I was going to get from Moscow to Shanghai. I took the train, and so I got to Novosibirsk, Siberia, and I had to make a decision. I flipped a coin and decided to go through Kazakhstan and Xinjiang rather than go down through Outer Mongolia and Manchuria.
Okay, wait just a second. Wait a second. You got to talk to your travel agent, Uncle Hansa. I mean, like, what were those Super Saver tickets? What are we going to do? What was the rationale, first of all? Because was it just like, I'm going to see how I can travel through Asia? Is that?
Oh, yes. In fact, this is the way I've done things all my life. I work for a while, get in a little bit of money, and then I buy a one-way ticket someplace. And then I try to figure out where I'm going and then buy a one-way ticket back home from someplace else. But when I go someplace, I usually go alone and I never know who I'm going to meet and I never know exactly where I'm going to go. I have a general idea. I knew I was going to go to Moscow and somehow get to Shanghai. And it took 3 months, but I met a lot of people along the way, and that's kind of the way my lifestyle is.
So how did you, if I can derail the Chinese characters for a second. How did you navigate through Russia? I mean, like, it's different, a whole different alphabet. It's, you know,
well,
it's not.
I studied Russian in high school, so I spoke enough Russian that I could actually manage to get around.
How old? You said you were 50, though, right?
Yes.
So you remembered your Russian from high school? Give me a break.
Well, I've had Russian friends. I've had Russian connections all my life. I was involved with the Russian Jewish immigrants back in the 1970s. And actually, I had connections with the Russian immigrants ever since the 70s. So I've never been completely away from Russian, although most of my life has been spent with Chinese.
Interesting. Great. So do you ever have, we'll talk about Russia later, but now you made it to Shanghai somehow and you had to choose the path to take. I'm sure that's all hours to be spent.
Yeah. Life must be interesting.
Was there any type of like place that because you said it took 3 months. So obviously there were some pit stops. There were some places where you stayed probably for more than a day or two, right?
I stayed in Siberia with some of my friends in Siberia. I knew some friends in Siberia. So I got to Akadym Gorodok and I spent a while there with some of my friends. And then by that time I had kind of met some people from Kazakhstan. So I went there and stayed with some friends there. And then I went to Urumqi and met new friends there and had some experiences on the train.
Is that kind of a zigzag, right? Because this isn't Siberia north and Kazakhstan. Isn't that south?
South, yes.
So you were not looking for a direct route to Shanghai, is what you're saying.
If I wanted a direct route, I would have taken an airplane.
Right. Okay, well, wow. Okay, pretty cool. Did you only travel by train throughout that experience, or were there other...
I hitchhiked. In Russian, they have something called auto stop, where you can, you know, talk with people, and maybe they'll take you someplace, and maybe, you know, you can give them some money. So it's... Right. Hitchhiking. And by the time I got to Eastern China, I was hopping trains. The first time I came to Nanjing was I hopped a train in Shanghai and I didn't know where the train was going. By the time the train stopped, I was in Nanjing. So I hopped off the train. And that was 22 years ago. That was my first experience with Nanjing. Now I live in Nanjing. And so, that's how I got to Nanjing the first time.
It was when you were 50.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now I'm 72 and I still do that kind of thing occasionally.
Yeah, I see that spirit in you in my brief time that we've been together. I appreciate it. I respect it a lot because it's not something you see that it's like you're a living example of like inquiry and just, you know,
You see a lot of stuff on the train. In fact, the train coming in from Kazakhstan across the Chinese border back then, there are lots of smugglers. And I have some smuggling stories, you know, in and out of Russia and China.
I don't doubt it. So, is there something that was unique to you that you found since, you know, with all those traveling that you've done? I mean, we're just looking at one point in your life, but I know you've done a lot more than that. But is there something that stands out to you about that experience as a traveler who likes to travel?
I think that when you are traveling, if you live in a place and you do the same thing every day, it's really, really difficult to be open to really, really new things. But if you're traveling and if you're on a train and if you're alone and you just talk to people, you have no idea what kind of people you're going to run into. And you almost always run into interesting people that you would have never run into otherwise. And of course, on this train with the E people, they're not your everyday people like Americans. You know, they dress differently and they have a different language and they eat different stuff. And so they're quite interesting. These days, you can go a lot of people and places, and you can usually find someone who speaks English. It's interesting if you can speak their language, or at least another language they understand. So that also makes life interesting if you can communicate with the people on different levels.
Yeah, that's the problem of convenience I have in Beijing is that it's such a global, it's a global city, that like I can find English everywhere. So it's the thing that's amazing about the traveling alone and not necessarily knowing how you're going to get from point A to point B, it could, you could possibly get lost or like get run in with the wrong crowd or,
Adam, I
yeah.
have never been lost in my life. I may have been confused for a month or two, but I've never been lost. When I was young, I had hitchhiked from Oregon to Newfoundland, and I was coming back from Newfoundland, and I was hitchhiking with this girl, and she was constantly complaining, "We're in the middle of nowhere and we don't have a ride." And I says, "No, we're not. We're in Nova Scotia. We're not in nowhere." And so my attitude is I'm always in a new and interesting place. I'm op totally open to going to it, to changing my destination in the middle of my trek.
There seems to be there is a common theme amongst humans where like where do I need to be next? Like where like we're lost, like how am I gonna get to the next point? It's like wait, we're here. This is the next point.
Yeah, some people
People.
are good travelers and some people aren't.
Okay, so going back to our experience on the slow train, I really appreciated the camaraderie. I think one of the differences I saw was that the camaraderie and like the ownership, like I felt like the people on the train really felt it was like their train. Didn't you get that sense? Like, and like
Yes.
the conductor was kind of like, the papa who was like, I gotta make, my main concern is having like these people, my family, basically, that he get from point A to point B and safely. And I felt that kind of sincerity in that.
Well, basically, everybody was, they were more concerned with being on the train than sitting there and being annoyed by the fact that they weren't where they were supposed to be. So, on the fast train, everybody's sitting there bored. When am I going to get to Beijing so I can be in a traffic jam? Whereas on the slow train, it's everybody, let's teach the kids, how to write their homework, how to do their homework, and stuff like that. They're more here and now. One of the problems with modern people everywhere, especially in big cities, is very few people are living in the here and now.
We're getting into like phone culture now, right? I mean, like, I always find it refreshing when I get on the subway and there's somebody like reading a book or just like looking out the window if it's like a above ground like train, or talking to someone for God's sakes. It's an amazing occurrence to me. I'm like almost confused by it. And I'm at fault that I don't necessarily, I hate looking at my phone, but I listen to a lot of podcasts and like or music, and so I'm kind of letting that like soundtrack or that those words that I hear kind of direct my thoughts, and I'm not really thinking about what I'm doing right there and then.
I have a story. I was in a store, and there was a bottle of Johnny Walker Black Label and a bottle of Johnny Walker Red Label. I almost never drink whiskey, but I decided since one was twice as much as the other, I'd get two bottles and see if there was an actual difference. And so I put them next to each other and I sipped one and then the other. And yes, there's a really major difference, except for one thing. Usually, when I drink whiskey, it's just to get drunk. And if you just like swig it down, you probably won't taste the difference. But if you actually smell the difference and take your time and think about what it tastes like, there's really a huge difference. And so one of the important things in life is to be here now. There was some guy called Baba Ramdas, Richard Alpert. He was back in the LSD days, and he wrote a book called Be Here Now. It was pretty famous back in the hippie days of the 60s.
Yeah. I love how you associate transportation with different levels of Johnny Walker. Anyway, so let's move forward. So, okay, so in your present day life there in Nanjing, how do you get around? Do you got like a driver, someone takes you around? Do you do DD? Do you take the bus, train? Do you walk, bicycle? I know you used to ride a motorcycle, for Christ's sake. tell me you're not still doing that.
Yes, I still ride the motorcycle, but now I also have a car. I don't have a driver's license because it's hard to get a driver's license here.
Really? It's hard. I got one, but I had to take the test. What is it? Three times I had to take it. But because you get to take it in your language, at least in Beijing, you get to take it in your language. But it was the translation is not good, and it's hard to understand sometimes. So, and there are like certain things like looking at this road, what should be the speed limit? Like, and you're like, what? This is like, you're supposed to determine whether it's a rural road or a urban road, you know, how many lanes. So there's some questions like that. And a lot of it is just like, you just have to memorize.
We have in China, we have DD, which is a kind of taxi. And all my life, I've never taken a taxi, almost never taken a taxi in the United States because they have been extremely expensive. But in China, it's extremely convenient. You have your cell phone, you call a taxi, call a DD, and he's there within a few, 5 minutes, and he takes you where you want, and for a pretty reasonable price. That's the way most people get around. And then there's public transportation. Public transportation is very good here, but you have to know the bus routes.
Is there a big, do they have a subway? Do they have a?
Oh yeah, we have a subway. We have multiple subways in Nanjing. Nanjing's a big city. Mm-hmm. And we have hundreds of bus routes, but you have to know the bus schedule and where it's going.
All right, so cool. I used to have, I'm notorious for having bikes being stolen since I've been in China. I think I've had 5 bikes of mine stolen. So I've kind of given up on it. And I found that the scooter, this like, not like a electric scooter. I'm talking about like the 2-wheel, like push with your foot scooter. This is what this is my usual transportation to like work and my day-to-day life or what I do with my kids. I take the push scooter to the bus stop, take the bus stop to work, then get back on the scooter to get all the way to, like, I mean, the bus doesn't stop right at my work, but so it's like a scooter, bus, scooter. And but if you're going into the city, like, because I live kind of, Shunyi is where I live in Beijing, it's by the airport, so it's like, if I wanted to go like to Dongcheng district, let's say, to go to like Hohai, or I would take the subway, definitely. It's just so convenient and cheap.
In Beijing, the traffic is so bad that driving is miserable. And also, I live close to the countryside, so it's not, I'm going to probably move to the village, local village here. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm going to move to the village. And then I'll be out of the city.
Yeah, that is another factor. The thing is, like, okay, so even if I was trapped, let's say my wife and I are going to go on a date, no kids, we could say, okay, let's take a, 100 RMB DD ride into the city, or we could take a 6 kwai subway ride. And you know what? They take the same amount of time. In fact, the subway in some instances takes less time, right? But, I'm wondering though, do you consider these public transportations, do you consider it like green transportation? It's much better on the environment to be in a subway, 30 people in one subway carriage versus every person in their individual car. But do you think subway and bus are, are considered green transportation? What's your stance on that? Do you?
The main thing about green transportation is we're going to run out, the world is going to run out of gasoline very, very soon. And also gasoline pollutes terribly. And so we have battery powered buses here in Nanjing, and we have electric powered subways. And so that's green.
You know that battery, where's that electricity coming from though?
We have the power grid, and it can come from either nuclear power or coal power. We have a lot more coal than gasoline. We're going to run out of gasoline real soon, but we have a lot of coal. And you can control the pollutants in coal much, much, much easier than you can with gasoline. So, you know, we're going from coal to nuclear powered. We'll probably have hydrogen fusion. And China is building huge wind power generators. And so if you analyze where the electricity comes from, in the end, it's going to be much cleaner than gasoline.
And I have seen China, I don't know about transportation so much, where the sources are coming from, but I know China is, yeah, into wind, and they're definitely into solar. Like I was talking about, you know, taking the family out to those like homestays out in the mountain, like those little villages now have been like refurbished. All the light posts and lampposts and all their self-sustaining grid system, basically completely solar powered. The lamps, I mean, they're not that bright, but they're, which is probably a good thing because you want to be out in the nature, you're out in the country, so you want to see the stars and everything. I don't know if it's purposeful.
Yeah, so we have solar powered trail lamps with what do you call it? With light emitting diodes, LEDs. And, you know, it's like you don't even have to worry about it, it powers itself.
Yeah. So, but green transportation. So I one of those trips, I actually rented an electric car, and I'm surprised that even when I got out into the, you know, there was charging stations, but I was the first time I actually drove an electric car, and I didn't realize how an impact like cold weather. It was like, this was in January. It was negative, like, I don't know, negative 10, 11, 12 degrees. And it just like the battery was going way down faster than it was predicting it would. Like it would give you a prediction on how many kilometers. So we literally ran out of like juice, and the car died like 2 kilometers from the charging station that we were trying to head to. And the thing is that the car, you know, you couldn't like tow it. You can't be put, once the battery's dead, there's no like mechanical mechanism to put in neutral. So you literally have to lift the car onto these like little roller skates for it, and then push it up the tow truck to get it to the charging station. It was awful. Anyway, but so that was annoying, but that's because of me being a first-time electric car driver and not knowing kind of the ins and outs of it. Compared to what is available in the U.S., the you know, the charging stations, the way that they are making the infrastructure for electric vehicles, I really commend China on that. So it's really a cool thing to see happen.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's go back to our experience real quick. This poem that you brought up, do you think that our experience along the Dalyang Mountain can actually be associated or relates to or has an impression that reminds you of this poem from, you know, thousands of years ago?
And well, what is that? Of course, back then the road was like extremely difficult. You had to walk it. Either that or take a horse, but it was extremely difficult. Now this road we took on the slow train, it's not really difficult, but it was very difficult to make. 50 years ago, they didn't have the train.
And yeah, there's tunnels made, right? I mean, they were going even through mountains. So, you know, you'd have to go over mountains on a horse or by foot before.
Yeah,
and not to mention the snow and the cold and the freezing and the...